2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Are you ready?
What's going on here?
Resistance is futile.
This,
indeed you are, Paul,
is...
It's in my hand, Paul!
Fan Effect.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Fan Effect. I'm Andy Farnsworth. The long-awaited Disney animated sequel Frozen 2 is finally in theaters. If you have kids, they've probably been begging you to see it for many months now. On the one hand, it's kind of hard to believe it's been 6 years since the first Frozen movie immediately became a big hit for Disney. But on the other hand, after 6 million viewings, at least at my house, of the movie, and at least as many playbacks of Let It Go, dozens of times helping my girls one or another get dressed up as Anna or Elsa, it actually makes me wonder if there was ever a time where we didn't have Frozen. Well, I'd like to welcome in my guests for this episode. We're going to be talking Frozen 2. Kellyanne Halverson from KSL's Movie Show, welcome back yet again.
Thank you for having me.
And Matthew Hansen, our Disney expert, Disney D23 insider, and the guy who brings us all the good Disney news that we wouldn't get any other way. So
glad to be here.
It's nice to have you guys here. Let's get talking about it then. Let's just jump right in. Frozen 2 reunites us with Anna and magical Elsa, our living snowman
Anna.
Olaf. I'm sorry. I've said Anna every time except for that one.
It's okay.
Anna's boyfriend, Kristoff, his reindeer, Sven. Kristoff's thinking maybe it's time to settle down. Let's lock this thing down. I mean, that's what you do when you get a girl that's way beyond your level. You lock it down. And so that's where we start the movie, is Kristoff thinking maybe we should get married. But Anna seems a little bit more concerned with Elsa than she does about Kristoff. Well, why? Well, Elsa's finally got her magical powers under control, so what should she be worried about? Well, the problem is she's noticing this melodic voice, which, by the way, because we don't have music rights, I can't play all of it, but this voice that she hears sounds an awful lot like Van Halen's How Do You Know When It's Love? I'm just telling you that right now. At any rate.
Yeah.
Every time I hear this voice, that's immediately what I think of, is that particular song. So, anyway, she hears this voice. She's the only one that seems to be hearing it. Elsa wonders if it's tied to an incident from her parents' past, which I won't spoil right now, but we will later. And then when tidal waves and earthquakes drive all the residents of Arendelle out and into the hills, as queen, she decides she better travel north and find out if there's some way she can use her powers to fix it and maybe even find out where her powers came from. So that's the setup for Frozen 2. Now we want to see what you guys thought of it. I actually gave it a really good rating. For me, it all started with the voice cast. Top notch, having Idina Menzel, Kristen Bell, Josh Gad, Jonathan Groff all back as the main characters. This time you also get Evan Rachel Wood, Sterling K. Brown, Alfred Molina, Alan Tudyk, and a bunch of others. But those were the big names that I noticed in the cast.
Oh, it's a great cast.
Amazing cast. I'm always shocked at the talent that comes out of these people. Like, Idina Menzel is my idol, has been since high school, since I first listened to Rent. Loved it. I loved all of them.
I didn't know Kristen Bell could sing until I saw Frozen 1. I didn't even know who Idina Menzel was until Frozen. Well, I hadn't seen Wicked, and I'd never seen Rent still.
Oh.
But, yeah, I mean, I could have the soundtrack.
The theater nerd in me is a little upset right
apparently,
now.
Apparently. Wow. I'm feeling
blown
back a little
bit. Well, do you know,
I always
try to sing on the show, so.
I haven't seen Rent either, so if that makes you feel any better, Andy.
I'm going to go.
It does.
Okay. We got to talk about this afterwards.
I knew she'd been on Broadway, but then actually getting a chance to hear her sing, then I was, oh, okay, this is a Broadway actress.
And
this was not the Emma Watson trying to carry a tune that was a little bit beyond her vocal range. This is somebody I'm not sure there is a song beyond her vocal range.
There's no auto-tuning. It's her.
Right. But I was more impressed with how Kristen Bell held it. And I actually thought in this one, it was even more impressive with some of the stuff. In fact, her song, The Next Right Thing, where she's mixing crying with singing. I got to figure that's not an easy thing to do. I thought that was pretty cool. Let's go right to this then, because I'm sure this is on a lot of people's minds. Music and songs, on par with the first movie, better or worse?
I like some of the songs better.
Yeah.
Okay, like which ones?
I think they're just as phenomenal, amazing as the first, but there's more of an emotional pull to them, particularly since you already know the characters and are just in love with them. And yeah. I love
this
them.
This is going to be the most famous one.
Oh, yeah, Into the Unknown. Yes.
I can just hear that, this vocal in the I can just hear them playing this in the parks at Disneyland. Like.
Some look for trouble while others don't.
And this is the one where really she gets to cut loose with her voice. I mean, I could jump ahead to that, but.
Well, it's.
When it's love. Sorry.
It's amazing because, like, she really, in the first one, she really just had to let it go where she got to really all out and belt. And she has two in this film. You have the Into the Unknown and then the Show Yourself song. Oh, I love it.
Show Yourself is another powerful one.
Yeah, so she has two power ballads, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I love it.
So nothing is going to approach Let It Go, and I think that's partially just because Let It Go was out of nowhere. Nobody mm-hmm. could have predicted that song was going to go as popular as it did on charts. I mean, parents probably could have guessed that they were going to hear that one a lot. I know that there's certain songs in Moana. I didn't think Shiny was going to be played as often at my house as it ended up getting played.
Oh, it's so fun.
Well, right. Of the songs in the movie, I didn't figure that one mm-hmm. would be. And then, of course, I did guess that the song with Maui was going to be fairly popular. It was obviously Manuel Miranda wrote that one. But from this one, now I'm a guy, and I'm also a guy in my 40s. So the things that probably stick with me more are going to be what are different than stick with you, someone still in your 20s, Kellyanne.
And I'm not in my 20s.
You're still in your 20s, aren't
no.
you? Are you over 30 now?
Yeah.
I forget. She looks a lot younger than she apparently is. And she sounds younger than she is. So that's a good thing.
I'll play off of that.
Matthew, you're a little closer to my age. But I think we're pretty darn close in age. But I'm curious to know, the minute that the song Lost in the Woods started, I can only play a little bit of this. And I was like, that is electric guitar. Are you kidding me?
And the way they set the shot.
What this sounds like a Chicago song.
Off on a different path than mine, I'm left behind. Wonder.
And he's like leaning against a tree, and then all of a sudden, boom, his face just appears in the same shot. And that's when I laughed out loud. Because I was like, okay, this is definitely a power ballad right out of the 1980s. Air Supply would be proud. Not just for the sound of it, because of course the sound of it, it's the subject song, feels like an Air Supply kind of song.
Well, I think it's nice that they're not just kind of keeping everything to the same sort of formula and style. Like they're kind of branching out with songs like this.
That was a wise idea.
There it is. And even the way they have the backup reindeer singing and the way all this, the images are merged together, it is brilliant. I probably laughed that part the second most in the whole movie.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What made you laugh the most?
Olaf's retelling of Frozen 1.
Oh, my gosh. True. That was pretty well done.
It's the best part.
I thought you were going to go, when you were talking about Olaf, one of the things that I thought was most fascinating about Frozen 2 was the way that they used Olaf. I thought that was really, really clever.
I mean, there's a lot of emotional, you know, darker kind of things in this, but then so much humor.
Oh, yeah. And,
so much humor.
And that's why I thought Olaf was really strategically well used, okay? Little kids are going to relate to Olaf. He was funny. The way he told stories, he's obviously an equal storyteller to C-3PO in the Star Wars movies, who we thought was the gold standard.
Toronto gosh. Master Luke at Chimney Chudu. Uto Millennium Falcon at Chimney Cloud City. Nutch Vader.
And now we've got Olaf retelling the story of Frozen, and then if you stay all the way through the credits, he retells the story of Frozen 2,
which is even better.
And it's to Marshmallow and the little mini snowman. I loved it.
In fact, I actually asked myself during the movie, where are the little mini snowmen? They're the cutest things in the world until Baby Yoda.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Thankfully, I stayed through the credits and said, there they are.
There they are.
Because those are Elsa's babies. And if she ever gets a cold again, who knows what's going to happen at this point.
That does bring up some questions about what happens when Elsa does truly leave. I don't know.
Let's talk about that, because I was getting there anyway. So Olaf, I thought, was really cleverly used. Little kids are going to relate to Olaf. I'm sure they already find him the funniest. He's the slapstick humor.
Right.
Him and Kristoff to some extent, and Sven to some extent, but really it's Olaf.
Oh, yeah.
Olaf is what helps kids feel like that's the kid in the movie. There are no little kids in the movie, so Olaf is the little kid.
Well, and to further that is his song that he sings.
This will all make sense when I am older. Someday I will see that this makes sense.
I thought that was a really clever way to do it. So he's walking through this dark, gloomy forest with, like, glowing eyes looking at him, big snarling teeth, and he's just kind of clueless, like, I'll have all the answers when I'm older. I don't know what this is. This looks like it's scary, but it's probably not. We're in the dark, enchanted wood. I know in a couple years, this will seem like childish fears. Yeah. To me, that was really one of the brilliant strokes of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Because then what they did is they bring in these darker, a little bit more grown-up themes. One of the biggest things I thought about Frozen 2 was the way that they could tell a complex story that could appeal to and impress an adult while also not being overwhelming to a kid. I mean, we're dealing with themes like depression, anxiety, fear. I mean, these are actual real
death,
themes
loss.
From the movie.
Yeah.
Death, exactly. And I think of my 6-year-old daughter wanting to come and see what's the latest from Anna and Elsa. And then Elsa freezes to death. And then Anna is heartbroken and literally laying in the pit of despair in a cave.
Holding the remaining parts of Olaf.
Olaf dies right in front of you.
By the way, this is not spoiler free right now.
No. I may have to go back and say that we're really spoiling the crud out of things. But they go and they deal with these heavier themes, which I thought was, I liked that.
I loved it.
It felt like they said, okay, look, we know that the kids who were 4, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10, 11, I mean, my preteens really loved the original Frozen.
Right.
And, of course, my 6-year-old still dresses as Elsa and Anna and has a stuffed Anna and a stuffed Elsa. And at one point I bought this, they gave me Kohl's cash and I used it on a canvas print of Anna and Elsa hugging, and it says "Sisters Forever."
Aww. Well, and they still have that in the film. That sisterly love is still there and everything. And what I really like about it is that it built off the themes of the original film without just replaying them. One of the things I've seen too much in sequels lately is, oh, we're just going to redo the same things. But no, we learned about these characters. We fell in love with them in the first movie. And now we're really seeing them grow. Because as we go into maturity, which is a big point of the film with Olaf and everything, we don't just have this one moment of let it go and then I figured out who I am. They keep progressing. I really liked this as a sequel.
Well, and I thought it was bold choices for a sequel movie with this much potential fan pressure on it. So I think it was kind of daring to try to do that. And Matthew, I'd like to get your thoughts on this, because I'd say it's pretty close between you and Kellyanne, who's a bigger Disney fan. But I'll give you the edge because you've been one longer. You go to the Disney things. You got to see clips from this before any of us did, before trailers were released. Or when there was just one teaser, you got to watch a more extended. But you got to see more of it than we got to see. So there's three different things. What were your hopes? Because your hopes and expectations can be completely different, as The Last Jedi proved. And as I think The Rise of Skywalker will also prove, as a result of The Last Jedi, people's hopes will be one thing. Their expectations may be another. And then what they get is something, hopefully maybe a mix of the two. But what was yours?
Well, I think, like Kellyanne said, it's hard sometimes with a sequel to not just rehash what you've already done. And so,
and this would have been a prime opportunity to just say, let's get the gang back together. It'll make gobs of money because it will.
Right. And have them reprise Let It Go or do, you know, anything
like
that.
Don't let it go. Yeah. We're really onto something here.
Let's have Elsa go after Anna, which is what I thought, but it was totally different.
I mean, Anna would be in danger.
Well, I thought it was going to be like a literal. The way they set up the trailers, I thought it'd be a literal just kind of switcher of roles, and she's going after Anna, but she was going after other things. So,
yeah. So, I mean, I was hoping for, you know, some natural progression that didn't feel like a rehash. And I think some of the darker, more adult themes that they kind of mix in there with the humor, it kind of is like growing up with the original audience of the kids and teens that were a big part of the first film's audience are now 6 years older and so able to maybe deal with a little bit more than they were 6 years ago.
And it could have been very easy to just aim it at 6 years. And first of all, I don't think the first Frozen was aimed at six-year-olds either, which is kind of what makes it impressive as to how much it was liked by the younger kids. And it feels like one of my kids' first words was, Frozy. Like, why don't it's Frozy?
My adorable little niece, before she can even really speak, she was singing Let Go. Like, go, go. That's how important it was to these little kids. I love it. I love it.
It was interesting to read the history of how originally they took the Ice Queen story from Hans Christian Andersen.
Yeah, the Snow Queen.
The Snow Queen, right, right, right. And then they were like, nah, let's make it a little more family friendly. You know, watch almost like shaping an ice block with a chink here and a little bit of a sanding there. And then they ended up fashioning one of their biggest money hits of all time. When we went to Disneyland with our kids in 2015, so Frozen was 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
To meet Anna and Elsa in Disney's California Adventure was like trying to meet Mickey in Toontown, where you got this huge line. And
it was like
whole
thing. It was still like that.
It was right. Yeah. But back then, it was like hours long to meet
them.
Right,
it was almost like you had to get a fast pass.
I think they did have fast passes.
They might have. But when we met them, we had our twins at home, and they were two. But they'd already watched Frozen enough that we just asked if it was okay if we just took a quick video for our twin two-year-olds at home, if Anna and Elsa would just wave and say hi to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were cool with that because that was also one where you could get an official picture taken. Mm-hmm. But they let you take pictures. But I swear they deliberately dimmed the lights so that it wasn't as good a picture if you didn't buy the one. That feels like a Disney trick. But even at age two, we went, look, Sally, we were with Anna and Elsa. Like, they're real people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way they could have predicted it was going to go that popular.
No.
So now we get Frozen 2, and they're like, well, so what do we do with them? What story do we tell next? Toy Story proves, even though there was no intention for a sequel, that you can still do it. Mm-hmm. You can do it well, and you can make a lot of money.
And it doesn't have to be a repetition of the exact same themes.
Exactly.
Well, and
did you feel like it was at all?
No.
Okay.
No,
I didn't
growth.
Think it was either.
It was growth. I loved
it. Well, and I think another thing that just kind of points at how they didn't anticipate how big it was going to be is, I mean, obviously with the films, they tie into the parks quite a bit. And there was quite a delay because they hadn't really gotten anything ready for the parks because they just thought, oh, this is our next movie.
That's a good point.
But then everybody was like, well, where's Frozen
why
in the
Anna
parks?
And Elsa were in the animation studio place because that was the only place with a big enough lobby to hold everybody.
Yeah, they're still there. Even years later, like, they're still in the parks. They took over basically the whole Norway pavilion at Epcot at Disney World. They took over a whole section of the animation station at Disneyland. They have the Frozen musical at the California Adventure at Disneyland. Like, they didn't realize how big it was going to be. And I wonder, like, are they going to keep moving? Like, this is Frozen 2 going to be as big?
Well, I think one indicator to, you can say what you will about Disney, but if there's a chance to monetize something and capitalize on it, they will. As they should, mm-hmm. You create a property and there's demand for it.
Merchandising.
If it touches people's hearts, that's what matters.
And I don't disagree with you. I have read a few people who feel like Frozen 2 was just a cash grab. Now, our friend Herb Scribner, who's guested a few times on the podcast, he put an article on DeseretNews.com with some of the people who had sort of loudly been proclaiming that. Mm-hmm. And his point was, even if it is a money grab, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of with him on that. My feeling is, and I felt this way since the last time I went to Disneyland, because there's a part of me that feels like, geez, Disney, cut us a break. It's expensive. You make it expensive because you know there's demand and you know that you've got the monopoly. That's part of the reason. I was more surprised that Disney Plus costs so little because that seemed to be the exact opposite of the way Disney did everything else.
Well, because they know if they love you, you're going to buy the Baby Yoda. If you love the stuff on Disney Plus, you're going to buy the Baby Yoda's merchandise. So let's give it to you for a good price.
But I thought they'd be like, well, let's see, the whole Disney library, what's that worth to you? $25, $30 a month?
Don't give them ideas.
I might do it.
Yeah.
Well, right. That's what I said. I was grateful they had mercy, and we're completely at their mercy. Let's not. And they don't let you forget that either, a.k.a. the Disney Vault. We'll release this for 1 month. Buy it now, because you may not see it for 20 years. Oh, I've got to buy it. And we all do. We all do. How many people have the full collection of Disney movies on VHS and DVD? If you could see hands, everyone's hands would be raised right now. So Disney does that to us, and I feel like they do that to us all the time. Mm-hmm. So when there wasn't a really effective way to monetize it, it meant they weren't planning on monetizing it. Mm-hmm. It's the reason the Bugs Life ride is not that big a deal, because it just didn't catch on the way other things did. It's why the Haunted Hotel makes way for Guardians of the Galaxy. The other reason, it's 6 years. If they could have produced this sooner, if they knew that Frozen 1 was going to be a hit, they would have put the wheels in motion to have this sequel sooner than 6 years later. It does take a 2 or 3 years to make one regardless.
But if they had done that, would it have just been a rushed rehash, like terrible sequels sometime, you know, as opposed to like something different?
See, I'm glad they did
that.
Good question. But they actually kept the interest in it throughout the time. Have you guys seen the shorts? Shorts? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
and
you had the Christmas shorts.
The,
you had
Olaf's,
the spring
Frozen
shorts.
Adventure that was not really a short, but they played it ahead of. But last year. They played that ahead of.
Coco. It was in front of Coco.
Is that what it was?
Was that last
yeah.
year?
Yeah. It was either last year or the year before.
No, I think you're right. I think it was Coco last year.
But I like that because they kept the interest in it. And I think those kind of slipped between the first and the second film. So you had their Christmas, you had their spring, you had their Olaf's Adventure. And then you're back into what winds us into fall here on the new film. So they kept your interest.
I did not even notice those seasons. Wow.
Yeah.
That's
and
impressive.
And so they kept your interest. And you also saw that it's been like a whole year. You see the maturity that's grown in the characters. I mention it in the film. Olaf's got his permafrost, so he's not followed by a little cloud all over the place. And then we have it. But they've
and
kept our interest.
And then he's brutally murdered.
And then he's brutally murdered.
I'm just kidding.
In a terrible, terrible cloud.
I really thought, wow.
Like, what a great song,
that's
though.
Like Old Yeller there for a second.
What a great song, though. And particularly since Anna, she was really struggling at the beginning. Like, I don't want to change. I want to be like this forever. When she's finally faced with this big change she has to take, and then her resolution of, I'm going to take the next right step. Like, I freaking loved that. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot find that is right. Grief has a gravity. Me down, but a tiny voice whispers in my mind, you are lost.
This is the next right thing.
That's what I was saying earlier about her ability to cry and sing at the same time. And she's literally in a cave of despair and hopeless. And I'm like, they're tackling like depression here. There's like a visual depiction of depression as I've ever seen. And it's in a kid's movie.
And it's brilliant. And like, I'm tearing up thinking about it. Oh, my gosh.
And it was really well done. This is why I liked the movie more than your movie show co-host.
I was biting my tongue.
Was for things like that is the darker moments. But by having Olaf, it allowed them to bring darker moments in. I was surprised how much my littlest kids liked Inside Out. I thought that was going to be completely the other way around. Mm-hmm. I thought my littlest kids would like The Good Dinosaur that year and that they wouldn't like Inside Out because it was a bunch of random abstract ideas that were fascinating if you were older and understood what they were going after. And it was just the opposite. My older kids liked The Good Dinosaur, which I thought was a little more simple. And my younger kids, my goodness, I think I saw Inside Out 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Or at least the first part with the little piano tinkling and then joy comes into existence.
Well, I think
but
it
I
goes
was surprised
back,
that like, it takes care of both because it does satisfy both. There's enough. Olaf keeps it simple enough. I was looking at the kids in the theater because I wasn't able to take my own to this screening. Mm-hmm. But I was curious, would they cry? Would they be upset? Would they have the Old Yeller moment? And then the kids were just like running around all over the place at the end of the movie. So I was like, well, obviously they didn't take this to heart. They're not walking out of this like, whoa.
Well, and that's what's the brilliant about how they wrote Olaf in this and his whole this will all make sense when I am older. Kids have these complicated ideas and thoughts and emotions and everything like that. So they will latch onto these darker themes like Inside Out, like Anna in the cave here. Like that, just because it's a mature subject doesn't mean that's something that kids aren't trying to figure out. Oh,
well, Mr. Rogers pointed that out.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm really sad. I'm jealous of you too.
So good.
I'm very jealous.
To me, I thought this was an emotional and satisfying sequel.
Yes.
It wasn't as light or silly, and I appreciated that.
And one other thing that we haven't mentioned is the level of detail of the animation.
Oh, my gosh.
You know what? I thought the story was so good that I honestly, I took all the animation for granted. Like, I really did. I wasn't thinking like, oh, my gosh, this is so cool. And when other people started saying that and I started thinking back about it, I was like, yeah, you know what? It really was. I just took it for granted that it was going to look as amazing as it did.
I mean, even something as simple as lichen on rocks. Or, I mean, the scene that was in the trailer of the water.
Don't you mean the beard on the trolls? Is that? No, I'm just kidding.
When I'm a female and I love a cosplay and stuff like that, some of the outfits even, like the when she's in her kind of snow dress when Elsa is and how the ice kind of fades into her skin on that outfit. Like, that's the detail I was noticing is these that minuscule little costume detail. It's beautiful.
Or, like, the aspen trees looked like real aspen trees.
Mm-hmm.
Water.
And the ice sculptures.
The water horse.
The horse with the, like, waterfall mane.
Or just how about the scene that was in the first trailer that we saw, which is her freezing a big thing of the ocean and watching the ice break as the water breaks up over the top of it.
It was visually stunning and very well put together. Oh. I liked it.
Kellyanne's like, I'm going to go see it as soon as we walk out.
I was trying to get my friend to see it tonight. And she's like, no, I'm staying with my husband tomorrow. I'm like, dang it.
Husband, why? All right, well, let's do this. We have to take a break. So we'll do that. We'll take a really fast one. And when we come back, I want to talk about a little bit of the story. We haven't gotten so much into the story. Mm-hmm. We've talked about some highlights and some specific things. But I want to talk about the story. You've both said that Frozen 2 is a good sequel. So let's talk about why. And then we'll do that when we get right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Talking Frozen 2 here on Fan Effect with Matthew Hansen and Kellyanne Halverson. I'm Andy Farnsworth, in case you forgot, since the beginning of the episode. All right. We talked about some spoilers. Obviously, we're going to do spoilers, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the actual story itself, plus different impressions, maybe thoughts that you had as you watched the movie, things that maybe aren't necessarily worth like a full-on back and forth discussion, but just some of the observations that I had. So a quick recap of the story. We start out in Arendelle. Anna doesn't want anything to change at the very beginning of the movie. So what's the one thing you can guarantee? Everything's going to change. All of a sudden, Arendelle's under siege. We get a quick flashback to Anna and Elsa's childhood where we get to know a little bit more about their parents. I thought it was a little suspicious that we knew all about her dad, but knew nothing about her about their mom.
Yeah, that was a bit.
In fact, for a minute, I was wondering if one of the sisters was from a different marriage or from a different reunion, or if Elsa was like kidnapped from the land of magic and Anna was their natural born child. They were just deliberately vague with their mother's identity. We did learn quickly that they're not Tarzan's parents,
as
was speculated a little
right.
bit.
But well, they told the girls they're going elsewhere. They're going to the other seas, but they ended up actually going north to try to solve a problem, which I knew because that's what they say in the musical.
Oh,
so
really?
So I went into the movie knowing, oh, I bet that it's the mother's line or something like that. So
did you know the mother was from Magic Land?
I didn't know it was Magic Land, but it was whatever. It was she was going to wherever the people.
I still don't think we got a very good explanation of why the parents died. Did the sea swallow them up? Was it the horse that was trying to drown Elsa? Was just trying to drown anybody that was going north to Adahalalalan? But we didn't. I didn't think we got a very good explanation. We got to see a nice frozen statue of them, I guess, about to die.
Mm-hmm. Sad.
Come on, it couldn't be a Disney movie if the parents actually survived, right?
Mm-hmm. Very few movies have the parents alive.
Parents barely make it to the halfway point of any movie.
Nah, we're mad at them enough for telling her to hide her magic all these years, to be afraid of it all these years. We don't want to see them again.
They were Jerry. All bad in the first movie, but you know, it softened them a little bit. It softened them a little bit by seeing, you know, what they were like. And then, you know, of course, we find out at the end, were you surprised at all that their mother saved their father's life?
No.
Was that really a surprise to anybody?
No. I mean, it's, you know, kind of the typical, like, fall in love, she saves him, they fought, you know.
What did you think about Anna or Elsa being the fifth element? Get it?
The fifth element.
All that was needed was her hair to turn red. No. But what did you think of that? I don't know.
It was obvious, but
I'm not
going to
criticize somebody because I couldn't come up with a better story. But as I was watching it, that was one part where I was like, it makes it seem like there was the fifth element. I mean, even in the Frozen logo where you've got the snowflake with the four, mm-hmm. it's like the points of the compass and then the center is her. I just wish they would have said, look, you're just a part of all of them. You're not a mysterious fifth portion of it.
Well, but she is a part of all of them.
Because what, ice?
Yeah.
Ice is an element suddenly?
Well, she's...
We got earth, air, fire, and water, and ice?
Well, but, like, it's the power of ice. Like, ice comes from the water.
The power of ice.
Like, it sounds... What is the Zoolander? Like, the water one. I'm okay.
She went to the college of people who read good.
No, because, like, ice is very powerful. Like, it's
ice
shaped by
water.
Wind. It can break
when
up earth. It melts
when
into
it's
water.
Frozen. I did find it ironic that Atalalan was frozen. Did you find that ironic in the movie Frozen?
No.
Mm-hmm. Atalalan was frozen.
Is that what it means?
No. The Atalalan, the spirit thing, the river, it was frozen.
Oh.
You didn't find that ironic?
No, I didn't find that. Like
in the movie Frozen?
It's fine. It's not ironic. It's just, yeah.
I thought it was ironic. Okay, fine.
Oh, I loved her interaction with the different, like with Gale and the horse. And oh my gosh, that little salamander thing.
Bruni.
What was his name?
Bruni.
Bruni?
Oh, yeah,
The little fire element.
You mean... Tangled's lizard that got away?
It was a salamander. They're different.
Oh, yeah. Very different.
I kept seeing all of our Disneyland when I was there last month.
Why have I suddenly turned into the cynic? I love the little thing, the fire thing.
It
but
was
I'm
so
just like,
cute.
It was
and she's like, kind of
like Tangled's pet. It's kind of like Tangled's
pet. And when he discovers snow and is catching snowflakes.
Oh, and he's like all nestled in and everything like that. I loved it. I loved how she was able to calm him down and everything because this is someone who struggled with anger her whole life and during the whole process of the first movie and Let It Go, she learned how to accept herself and calm back down and be okay with that. And she was, because
after
that she lesson,
murdered her sister.
Nearly murdered her sister. Nearly. But like, so her being able to calm those around her, I liked that. Although she really didn't do that with the rocks. They were kind of just ignored, those trolls, which makes me sad because that's my Scandinavian heritage.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So back to the story.
Sorry.
We find out that the people of Arendelle and the people of It was very obvious that there were some parallels, you know, to the colonization of the Americas, et cetera, with the Native American looking people that were natives mm-hmm. of the land and the Arendelle sort of invaders, if you will. And then it was fairly obvious to me, although it probably won't be to little kids, that as soon as we didn't see what started the fight, it was going to be completely different than what everybody, what it looks like it's being implied was what started it. Mm-hmm. We had to assume that it was the Arendellians who had started the fight just because we didn't get to see for sure that it wasn't them. But this idea that some of the people of Arendelle were still trapped inside the bubble all those years, Sterling K. Brown's general
Matias.
As a prime example, Matias, and that they've been kind of carrying on this. Well, it seemed like they'd been fighting, but obviously they hadn't been fighting that hard if it had been enough years for Anna and Elsa to both be born and grown.
Yeah.
That maybe they kind of had an uneasy truce within the bubble because none of them could get out.
Mm-hmm.
But then Elsa follows the voice, which is apparently this Atahalan that's calling to him, which is the song that their mother sang to him. They did a good job of tying all the things together.
Northoldia is the name of the people above.
Northoldia?
Northoldra.
Northoldra. That sounds right. Okay. That's fantastic. Thank
Northoldra.
And it's the Sami-inspired, the Sami people is what inspired their, like, native look and culture. Okay. Sorry. I just looked it up because that drove me nuts.
No, I'm glad that that there's the... Considering the movie's only been out for like 12 hours, I'm glad that this information's readily available.
Thank you, Google. Well, they thanked the people at the end of the credits, so...
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I got to admit, when Elsa undoes her braid, I was like, ooh, check that out. She's different. She's not buttoned up anymore.
It was the same as the first movie.
She only does her braid when she's under control, apparently.
As someone who has long hair most of the time, I understand that.
I do remember. I actually wrote this down. Wow, they actually allowed a guy to save a girl when Kristoff saves Anna. It just feels like we're getting away from that. And so it was nice to have it revisited for a second. You know, unlike Charlie's Angels, which gave me a headache from being hit over the head with the women don't need men, men bad, women good, Frozen 2 really had a chance to do that. I felt like they showed balance. They showed that Anna did need Kristoff, but not for everything. Mm-hmm. And that Kristoff needed Anna, and that Elsa needed help too, even though she had powers. Like, I felt like there was a good representation. And honestly, that's all I ask is, mm-hmm. I don't believe that women need to be saved by men all the time. So I don't necessarily, it doesn't have to be that way. But I also don't like it to be completely flipped in the reverse to where it's like, well, men are just completely useless. I don't know. Am I the only person that thinks that? You're a girl, Kellyanne. What do you feel like? You're Googling today's day.
I'm the girl, and I am the token Solid fan girl.
Oh, listen to this. See, that's what
no,
I'm talking about.
You guys
about.
Are fantastic. You guys are great. I think they've been trying to overcome for so many years that damsel in distress trope that they've really pushed that out there. But they're getting to the point now where it's like, okay, we understand there. It doesn't have to be that way, but it's okay to also bring it in. And I think it also goes very much to the development of Kristoff's character. He went from this very solitary person who had to kind of even give the idea of falling in love. He had to kind of fall in love with that idea as he fell in love with Anna and be okay with it. And he in the film, he really worries that Anna's going to kind
of
leave him.
In love with Sven. Which, by the way, did you catch the part in Frozen 2 where he's showing how he's going to propose to Anna? Oh, and yes. He's in front of Sven, and the mom just, like, covers her kid's eye right there.
That was pretty good. Hey, and he apparently learned to take a shower because they didn't make fun of his smell at any point.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And Sven got to get some other reindeer.
Yeah, that's true. And it was very telling for his character because he was worried that Anna was basically too good for him and going to leave him behind because she's always off there. And no, he was the one, he was still there for her and she's there for him. And it was a good relationship there. So I think it's, yes, it's okay. It's fine to have damsel in distress and the man in distress and we're all saving each other. And
well, that's
it's
one
a
of the things I liked about Lost in the Woods. I laughed at it, but at the same time, I can freely admit if my wife was gone, mm-hmm. I would be like a mess. Mm-hmm. Especially with our life situation, if she just wasn't there and it was just me and the kids, it would be just like there was an old saying from Carl's Jr. back before I got married. It was without us, some guys would starve. That was pretty much true of me at the time. So I wouldn't be shocked if I saw some backlash even about that song. But I totally am on board with that idea. Uh-huh. Like, yeah, we need each other. That's the whole point. Well, we need each other. And that was one of the things, too, that the lands and the people are connected by love mm-hmm. at the end of the movie instead of connected by the dam instead of connected by
instead
the fact that they're trapped in a dome.
Separating them instead of something right. controlling.
Now they're all choosing to be together.
I love it. Well, and the whole film is about that. You look at the relationship with the sisters, the romantic relationship between Anna and Kristoff, and then the friend relationship or even parent-child relationship with Olaf. It's all about relationships and love and trusting each other and working together to figure out who you are and to make a better world and a better community. Arendelle survives, their family survives, their relationships survive. It's fantastic.
And so what are we going to see in Frozen 3?
Are they going to do another one? I feel pretty good right now with Frozen 2.
Well, didn't you say that after Toy Story 3?
No, Toy Story 3 devastated me. We've discussed this before. That is the one film I've only seen once and I will not see again because it's scary.
I mean, they're only going to do it if they can come up with something because that seems like what they're instead right. of just pumping out a sequel to do a sequel. It's okay. We have this idea that we feel is worth doing. Mm-hmm. So it would be interesting to see if they do a third one, what that story, like what direction they would take things.
I know where the audience wants to take them.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing the audience doesn't get to write scripts. What did you think about Elsa kind of getting to have her cake and eat it too?
In regards of?
With everything. She got everything. The sacrifice, she comes back to life. Olaf dies, he comes back to life.
I was
glad that they were willing to give Olaf a death, and it was a meaningful death, but she kind of gets to have her cake and eat it too. She makes the sacrifice. They both die, but then they're both not dead. Do you think that feel like that cheapens the sacrifice at all or undercuts it a little bit?
No, because I think she pushed herself to the point of death, and she was willing to do that to discover and to save Arendelle. And even though she was able to be like brought back and be able to see the result of it, the fact that she risked enough in a film, in a family friendly film, to even get to the point of death, like I think it's totally okay that she's able to get to that point and then be brought back with all the blessings she needed or the help she wanted. Is that what you're getting at? Or,
well, part of the thing about Saga, and this is one of the criticisms of the Marvel movies, is if nobody can really die, then when they really die, is it that big a deal? If they're just going to come back three movies later or two movies later.
But they could die, but the audience doesn't want it.
Well,
so
right.
Just let them keep going.
And that's my point. Nobody wants Olaf to die either.
No.
And yet he does.
If she's dead and not in Frozen 3, then they can't sell more toys when Frozen 3 comes out.
Like,
but see, that's the cynical part.
I know. I just had to throw that in.
But it's true. And that's one of the criticisms of the comic book things, too.
But like, if we never... But if they put these hard stops on some stories and some characters, you never can see the progress and never see where it goes. And then the lessons you're learning as you fall in love with these stories, there's no new ones. Like, if I really think storytelling is one of the most powerful things in the world, and it's the only thing that will change the world. And if we put a hard stop on something people are involved with just because we can't, and not, life isn't always beautiful and lovely, we're not learning lessons from it. We're not evolving from it.
But doesn't that teach a lesson? It's a hard lesson.
Like, I can fail out of a class and not be given the opportunity to learn again, but I just want to keep learning. Like, you know, let people keep learning from the characters and the stories they love.
Think about this. At the end of A Tale of Two Cities,
one
of the greatest
book.
Lines of all literature is, it's a far, far better thing I do now than I've ever done. And it's a far greater rest that I go to now than I've ever known. Why is that?
Because there's an actual rest?
No, but because he was willing to give his life to trade spots with the guy so the guy could go be with the girl that they both loved. And he says, this is a far, far greater thing I could ever do now. Now, if in A Tale of Two Cities 2 or A Tale of Three Cities, the guy and the girl stage a prison breakout and save him from the gallows just moments before death, is that a better ending? Does that make it a better story? Or does that rob the story of the power that it had in the first place?
I think the way the story went and the elements in this story, I mean, it didn't feel cheap.
But see, it's hard not to see it that way because of what you, even when you were joking, it's only funny because who knows if they said, let's actually keep Olaf dead, and some other people were like, we can't do that. We got to sell toys. And no kid will ever see this movie twice if he stays dead.
Well, I think I always have to defer back to the writers.
This all makes sense when I'm older. Oh, well, guess what, Olaf? You're only going to get about an hour older.
Okay, so Harry Potter universe, the Battle of Hogwarts, so many people die.
Yes.
It's heartbreaking.
Yep.
It's wrenching.
J.K. Rowling's even regretted that she killed some of them.
Oh, she better. I'm so mad about Tonk still. And we talked Dobby. But it's the writer's choice. Like, if the writers or the creators or the filmmakers or whatnot had made the choice to kill the character, then, you know, I'm going to hand it to their
hands.
But
see, now I feel like you're arguing against yourself now. From what you just said what I was saying.
But no, I'm saying
you feel by what
sides.
The story says that Olaf should go.
But it's the choice of the writer.
Right, but...
But it's the choice of the writer, and the writers didn't choose.
But was it?
Hey, the filmmakers, the writers get the final say. Like,
do they though? You own Disney, Matthew. So tell us what.
Yes, Mr. Disney here.
How much of Disney do you own? What percentage right now?
Oh, percentage, a minuscule,
a thousandth of a percent. Is it plausible to think that even if the if Chris Buck and Jennifer Lee said this would be such a an emotionally resonant way, a satisfying way to end Olaf's story and have it be meaningful to help, you know, he's not technically alive. He's still a snowman. He was their childhood friend that they but magic made him alive. Mm-hmm. He does the thing. He teaches him about water having a memory. That was a convenient way to bring him back. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't upset with it. I'm just asking the question is, if having them all come back undercuts the power of what they did in the first place.
I don't think so. I think...
I mean, Anna being her selfless act, her act of love, freeing herself from the spell, mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty clever. And it worked. And she made the sacrifice, and it wasn't somebody else. Like, it was just that she met the terms of the curse in a way that you never would have imagined. And so I wonder, when we have a death and we undercut the death, does it take away some of the meaning?
I'm just going to say no.
Okay.
I'm just going to say no. I can keep arguing with it, but no, it's in the writer's hands what meaning they want to portray anyway. And
well, we don't like people to die.
I'm still
part
mad.
Of the reason that I was
I'm
so
still
traumatized
mad about the end of Toy
Han
Story
Solo's
4.
Death.
So
the writers decided that.
I know. So, like, both sides.
Well, and I think if the writers had decided, okay, we're going to actually kill these people off. Or if you could say, well, they didn't actually kill them off because, you know, the higher ups probably told them we got to still sell merchandise. Well, I think Rogue One is a good example mm-hmm. of they can kill people off. I mean, even
they
just,
were originally not going to get killed.
Right.
Then they decided that.
How can they do that?
Well, they originally weren't going to because
they were
going
to get off the surface.
They
oh.
didn't.
What it was.
They didn't think that That's the higher stupid. Ups would allow them to kill them just because of the merchandise and
no,
other.
The whole thing is we lost many great men or whatever. The
no,
exact
you keep
quote.
Getting mixed up. That... Many Bothans died to bring us this information. That's the second Death Star.
Okay.
The first Death Star.
I'm sorry.
I've had to correct that one every day since they first announced Rogue One.
I'm not as huge with Star Wars, you know this. Test me in Harry Potter and I'll beat you.
That's possible. But that was my whole point. I was okay with it coming back, and I really do believe, like, I have never watched Old Yeller twice or Where the Red Fern Grows twice. Mm-hmm. Seen them. Mm-hmm. Not going to watch them again. Mm-hmm. Anytime someone was dramatically killed in something.
It's really hard.
It is.
Well, and they don't want that because you want to continue the story. It's
again,
a family story.
Again, merchandising and things like that.
And yes, merchandising.
Did you see Marley and Me?
No.
Why not?
Because
you heard what happened.
I heard what happens.
And
I'm not
so
going to watch
even
that.
Even see it.
I teared up just thinking about Anna in that cave just now. I'm not going to watch a show about dogs passing away. I have like the biggest crybaby.
You know, I think of some of the stories. You know, you talk about the power of storytelling, and I use the Tale of Two Cities as an example. But you know, in a more pop culture sense, to me, the death of Gwen Stacy in the Spider-Man comics. It's one of the most powerful things. For all the things that Amazing Spider-Man 2 got wrong or that didn't do well, I thought that part was done pretty well. Gwen Stacy's death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gwen Stacy's death and Uncle Ben Parker's death. I mean, Uncle Ben's death, if you undo that, you undo who Spider-Man is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the fact that Spider-Man considered it his fault. But those two deaths are one of the few deaths that they haven't undone completely. Though they kind of did with Gwen Stacy, and now we've got Spider-Gwen, which is a lot of people love.
But that's the multiverse. That's a whole different thing, which I freaking love that film. I can't wait for the next one.
But the death of a character, once it's undone, it takes, I don't know. I don't like death any more than you do, but...
But I don't think it takes away the power of it, because the sacrifice is able to be there. There's this one... little story my dad would tell us when we're talking about sacrificing for others, and basically a sister got in an accident and the brother, the doctors asked if he'd give him his blood and he said sure, and then he asked the doctor after a little bit, like, when am I going to die because I gave my sister the blood, like that, and they had to explain to him that no, you're not going to die from that. The fact that you would put yourself to that extreme where you put your life at risk, you put your own personal story at risk for others is just as powerful as if the death had actually happened. So I'm making a choice. I do not think it's a negative that she had her.
So to you, it's the intent
Yeah.
That's more important than the result.
Yeah. Like that was there. That's just as powerful that someone would be willing to die for their sister, for their people, for Arendelle, which is weird. They just kind of abandoned Arendelle that whole time.
You guys just hang out on this cliff and we're going to go fix this.
Like, there's no shelter or anything.
What if they were all in the city when the tidal wave came down? How bad would Elsa have felt then?
When it came down, they're still just hanging out on the cliff.
I think that's a pretty good argument. Mm-hmm. I could agree with you that the intent is more important than the full outcome. Yeah. I'm with you. I've got 100 million examples. I'm just trying to debate in my mind. Should I keep giving them? But I think we've made the point.
Yeah.
All right. Would you like to see another Frozen story? Yes or no? Or would you rather have it be in shorts?
I mean, the shorts is a good way to kind of.
That's how I feel about Toy Story. I don't think I need another full Toy Story movie, especially now that the group's been split up.
I didn't need the fourth.
You didn't need the third either. It sounds
like.
I mean, yeah. I think shorts are a good way to just kind of quickly revisit. You know, I mean, it doesn't need as fleshed out of a story. It's just this quick little moment or, you know, event that happens that we see and then that's it. And so I think that would be a good way to revisit it, especially if they don't have anything that they feel is worthy of doing a full movie just for the sake of doing another movie.
Well, there's a lot of work to go into it. So if you're going to make a movie, that was kind of the complaint about Olaf's Frozen Adventures. It was too long to be a short, but it was too short to be a movie, so what exactly was it? And that's why people were mad that they had like a 30-minute cartoon ahead of Coco.
Yeah.
They're like, no, I didn't come here to spend 3 hours at the theater tonight between 20 minutes of previews, a 30-minute cartoon, and then another hour and a half of movie. I like the fact that ABC is owned by Disney because then they can do what they've done with the properties. Just make us a little cartoon that we can watch during the holidays or, you know, throw something on TV. Give us a little fix here and there. Make sure you always bring back the original voice cast because
We've learned that from Aladdin 2. You have to have the same voice.
Well, as your host pointed out on the movie show today, this is the first princess movie with a sequel that didn't go straight to video, which I kind of was surprised by that. And I feel like we're getting another Tangled movie. Isn't there one in the works? I'm asking our Disney experts.
I haven't heard of one.
They have the series like on television
stuff. That's right.
So maybe that's what you're thinking.
Well, yeah. No, I knew about that too, but I just felt like there was another movie in the works. But maybe not. Maybe since they're telling all the stories. Would you take a Frozen series?
Yeah.
Well. No. They make them too cutesy and short and formulaic. And one thing I love about the Frozen films is they're so complex. And I don't want a series about that.
And some of the darker elements that you probably wouldn't get in like a cutesy little.
Yeah, I wrote
down
a quote.
And you know, it just turned into this weird Olaf worship.
Hey, as long as they show those little snow babies, I'll watch
it. I love the snow babies and marshmallow.
I wrote down one of the lines, you talk about complexity, one of Anna's lines in The Next Right Step is, "Hello, darkness, I'm ready to succumb." I'm like, this is a kid's movie? With a question mark.
But, like, that's important because kids...
I liked it.
Can feel down as well, and particularly when they're faced with their first death
kid.
Or something
Hello,
like
darkness,
that.
Hello, darkness, I'm ready to succumb.
But she acknowledged she felt that way, and then she literally climbed out of it.
She was literally
in the next
depths of darkness.
By taking the next, doing the next right thing, taking the next right steps. So I love this. This thing I tell my niece and nephew all the time, or when they're really upset, it's like, it's okay, you're feeling like this, but you need to move through it, and we're going to move forward from it.
Get down to this next breath, this next step, this next choice is one that I can make.
You just want to see me crying.
Yeah,
again,
I'm trying to get it.
You
think I get it out of you? This sounds like it could have been right out of Les Mis, honestly.
Like, but that's an important thing to tell kids. It's like, yeah, you're going to face hard things, and there's going to be. You're going to see death in your life and you're going to see these hard things. But you know what? You fail it and then you take the next right step.
Yeah, you keep going.
Mm-hmm. We kindly like.
This message brought to you by the power of positive thinking.
Can I just restate again? I love the music in this.
Yes, you can.
I've been listening. I went back and I've been listening to the soundtrack And I just love it so much. I don't know if my favorite part about this is the music or if it's Olaf retelling the whole first film.
I wish I could find that online just to play a clip
of it. Oh, you know they're going to protect that.
Right. Well, that's eventually. Like, somebody will get it online soon. Can't I just wait. Don't have it yet.
Well, and I also think, you know, we were talking earlier, too, about, you know, some of the departures of what you would normally expect. Mm-hmm. I think in the music as well, I mean, when the credits started to roll, there was the covers of the songs from the movie. And I was, you know, I was surprised that one is by Panic at the Disco and another is by Weezer.
That's true. You did mention that.
Like, I mean, it's just, it's not something that you would expect in a Disney princess movie.
Well, I don't know.
Who
did the last one? It was...
Which one?
Somebody else sang a version of Let It Go, and it didn't catch on.
I don't know. These ones will catch on. Like, well, I love...
No, but I mean the popular version, the one sung by the pop singer. Because they do that. They have a song that's in the movie, and then they have a pop version of it that plays during the credits, and then they release the pop version as a single. I can't remember who did
it. Didn't pick it
I'd
up.
Have to look it up. But that version didn't catch on, and eventually the radio version that got played was not the pop version. It was the version sung by Idina Menzel, the one from the movie,
mm-hmm.
was the one that got the radio mm-hmm. play because it was better. Because
she's amazing, and yes, we want to hear her all the time, every day. I love you, Idina Menzel. Follow me on Twitter. Okay. Kellyanne Halvo.
Oh, nice. All right. Well, if there's anything else you want to add about Frozen, you're going to have to add it online. We've come to the end of our journey today. Kellyanne Halverson from KSL's Movie Show, thank you for coming
thank
back
you.
In. Matthew Hansen, our Disney expert, our Disney co-owner, I think we're allowed to call you that. And our D23 insider, we all did like Frozen 2. Kellyanne's raising her hand. Yes, Kellyanne.
I just looked it up. It was Demi Lovato who did Let It Go.
Lovato. And didn't she just go to rehab?
I think she did. But
see?
I think it's for other things. Like,
yeah, it was exhaustion.
We love her. We love her, too, okay? You get healthy. You be you. Ignore Andy.
Ignore me, yes. But don't ignore me when it comes to becoming a subscriber to Fan Effect Podcast. We're available on Spotify. We're available on Google Play Music. We're available on Apple Podcasts. We'd love to have you become a subscriber. Leave us a review. If you followed us from social media, go check us out. Check out some of our episodes. I say give us 5 episodes. If you just give us a chance, that's all we ask. We'll catch you the next one. We've got Star Wars coming up next month, so you know we're going to be talking about a lot more stuff.